All right. For the dry bulk panel, from the very lows and all-time lows, actually, we saw on the rate side earlier this year and also for asset values, we at Fearnleys turned positive toward the sector during the course of the spring this year. As Mr. Ellingsen commented earlier, we are optimistic toward the fundamentals in the industry going forward. I think there are exciting opportunities to be had in the market. And as Mr. Ellingsen also noted earlier, our in-house dry bulk analysts are now actually saying that 2016 is the year to buy dry bulk. Actually, what we've seen in the past few weeks is that investors seem to be coming around a bit. Stock prices have come up for these companies and their peers, and we've seen rates improve a bit, and also values are starting to move. So I guess a good starting point, and we might be jumping the gun a bit on one of the later panels of the day, is whether there is actually capital available to shipping today. I think our panelists today prove that there is, with all of them having raised equity capital over the last year. I guess a good opening point would perhaps be whether this is any fresh capital, new capital being pushed into the business, or is it primarily existing shareholders protecting their investments? Gary, would you like to jump the gun today?
Sure. So thanks very much for having us on the panel. I mean, I can speak for our case in Eagle, and that is that in our private placement, the $88 million of capital we raised, approximately 40% came from new investors. We had 25 new investors, and of course, broad support from our existing shareholders. So, I think it shows that there is interest in the sector. It's definitely not overwhelming, but for the right investment, I think there is an opportunity there.
Is that the same sort of feeling that the rest of you have from your experiences in the capital markets over the last year?
Well, if I may say about Seanergy, back in August, we raised a small amount of money. Unfortunately, due to the limitations of our self-registration, we couldn't have raised more than $5 million at the time. But we found that there was more than sufficient demand. We raised $5 million. We could have raised more than $30 million at the time. I don't know if those were our capital, by the way, was 100% third-party capital. We didn't have any insiders participating. So I must say that for the right company and the right fundamentals, that there might be third-party capital going back into the shipping on a very, very selective basis.
Yeah, for Golden Ocean, we raised $200 million in February, of which our main shareholder and some larger funds contributed, but $75 million was fresh equity among 140 shareholders. I think it's fair to say that at the time it was a heavy Nordic influence in our capital raise. This was almost timed by the all-time low of the index, but we saw good demand for a significant amount of dollars.
Very good. And you're speaking of, I mean, for the right company, for the right setup, could you comment a bit on what are the key attributes which investors are actually seeking, you know, when you've been out speaking to investors during your capital raises?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it. I think if you bifurcate and talk about rescue capital, then the most important thing is runway. Right, because without sufficient runway, then of course there's just not an appetite to put money in. But then, as you move forward to growth, then I think it's very much nuanced depending on the investor. But it's important for management to be able to articulate the strategy, that there's transparency in the company, that investors are able to model and rely on the information. I think that governance is definitely an area that has more focus and alignment of management with the investors. So again, each investor you talk to, I think, has different areas that of importance that tick the box, but those definitely are ones that I think are at the forefront at the moment.
Yeah, and I would agree with Gary. It's efficiency, runway, and I would say it's also the break-even. And you know, you manage to show to the investors that you have the lowest break-even, you have an efficient platform, and you're able to sustain a prolonged recession in the market.
An additional point is also to remove uncertainties in terms of, say, drawdown of debt, covenants, that you have a very good covenant structure, so there is limited downside on the cash, except for what you see on the running operations.
Thanks. I would very much agree. That's sort of the lines that we speak to investors about these days. And just a note, I spoke about the increased interest among investors. When we started to come around being on the positive side toward the dry bulk segment, there was very little interest in the industry. And after you guys have been out marketing your companies and you've seen some improvement in rates and values and the fundamentals have improved somewhat for the industry, I suppose. But on the asset value side, there is definitely a difference between the pricing of a new build compared to a 5 or 10 year old vessel. Have you noticed any preference among investors with regards to what type of fleet you have, the fleet composition?
Well, if I may say, no investor and no company in the right mind would be looking at any new buildings right now. I think it doesn't make any sense at all. The price differential is like one of the biggest we've seen in history. I think that the multiplier of a new building as compared to 5 year old must be one of the largest since 1987 that we ran the figures. So it doesn't make any financial sense. It doesn't make any sense at all to add additional tonnage into the supply. So I'm sure that all the investors would not be pushing any company to run any new building order book right now. So high quality secondhand ships is what matters these days. At the end of the day, they make the same money as a new building, so it doesn't really make sense for a new building. It's secondhand, high quality secondhand is the key in today's market.
Thanks. And David, would you care to jump on that one? I mean, you have perhaps the newest fleet of the panel today. Is this something that investors are appreciating, do you think, when you jump
Well, I think it's... I'd be pretty hard-pushed to describe it as a strategy. It's pretty much where we've got to as a business. But we're doing exactly what we intended to do, and I suppose what our shareholders would expect us to do. You know, we announced this week that we've pushed back some of our new build deliveries into next year. We've also announced that we managed to reduce the price. So with that in mind, as I think people are aware, you know, we made some significant fleet disposals last year as well. And I'd really echo what the panel here has said. You know, I think it would be hard pushed to justify any new orders from here. We're just making sure that we manage our position as aggressively as we can, whether it's raising equity, we've done that twice this year already, whether it's selling vessels, which we've done, reducing cost and reducing price of our new builds and pushing that back. So the fleet we have, we're very pleased with from an operational perspective. It's a new fleet. It's pretty easy to run. Our customers like the vessels, and we feel we're in a reasonably good position for an upswing. But I think it's clearly not what you would do now if you had the choice on the front foot.
And speaking of values, simple question, but might be open for some discussion. Is there an excessive focus on NAV these days? When you speak to investors, I mean, how do you price your equity offering when you've been around?
I mean, we would love there to be a focus on NAV, actually, but maybe that would help our stock price. But I think the most important thing about our stock, and I'd even hesitate to say it's across the piece here, is that most of these stocks are still valued as options, and as most of you are aware who look at financial theory, there's really two things that are value in an option. You know, one is the theta, which is the time value of it, and the other is the strike price, which is effectively where you start making money. So if you think about the way that the market is approaching these equities, I'm loath to say it's irrational. I think it's fairly straightforward in that we are responding to that by increasing our runway, which one of the folk up here has already referred to, and also, you know, reducing our break-evens. again, you know, there are people on this panel who've seen many more cycles than I have, and I'm sure we'll get into as and when and how this turns. But we know as and when we get $5,000 on day rates that the business will throw off sort of 75 odd million of cash. So we want to make sure we're in the best place to do, we've got the best runway to do that, the best theta in the option, and the best strike on the option as and when that comes. And that's really what we're focused on.
To me, it was quite interesting a few weeks ago, seeing one of the main investors or one of the active investors in Dry Bulk started to talk about yield rather than asset values. I think that's an interesting approach and a different approach than what we have seen up until now. With if you put some money at work, all based on equity, you could actually have some interesting yield while you hopefully wait for the market to recover or the asset values to recover.
Very good. And I mean, speaking of recovery, so far this year, as I said, rates have picked up a bit. Is this a seasonal factor, do you think? Or is it actually something fundamentally improving? We're seeing that new build deliveries are slowing down, scrapping has picked up, and I think Chinese demand has surprised on the upside so far, at least from where we see it.
The question is whether you have a real rush or urgency to buy any vessels. I think first quarter this year was the 35 or 30 year low as far as the dry bulk market. Since then, the asset values has improved by 10%. The question is, when will there be a further uptick or a substantial uptick? And I think it's, you know, most people see that we need patience. So do you need to invest now, or might you as well wait? I mean, it's the world has changed. The Chinese boom is over. We will see, you know, 1 to 3% growth on supply and demand the next few years. So, you know, we're not going to see another bonanza. So, you know, maybe it's better to be a little bit patient and wait and see a little bit. That's the way we are looking at it. And we have certainly learned that, you know, believing that we were very smart, we positioned ourselves for an uptick in 2013, and we all saw how that went. So, you know, our conclusion is that we don't have a clue what's happening beyond the next 6 to 9 months. So we rather play the short-term market and try to extract some value from that rather than to speculate on assets where we don't really know what is going to happen. And what's the scary part is that, you know, we're now all a little bit more optimistic because the coal side looks slightly brighter. But it's all down to 7 guys in Beijing who decides on the next policy move, and that changes week on week. So it's very hard to make long-term decisions based on that those fundamentals.
Tien's point, I mean, it is very difficult to time it. I've been in dry bulk almost 30 years now, and to try and say that, you know, waiting 6 months and then doing something because that's the optimal time is fraught with pitfalls. I think what's important is looking at where we are in terms of asset prices relative to entry points where ships were ordered, what replacement cost is, and then of course whatever you do, you need to ensure that you have the structure in place and the capital to be there for that upturn. So to do anything that would put the investment at risk, over leverage, which doesn't take much in the current environment, or things like that, you know, wouldn't be prudent. But to try and wait and time the dry bulk market, I think is extremely difficult. Would be an understatement.
Yeah, and to Gary's point, I have to agree. Back in April, we saw the lowest part of the last 30 years in respect of the asset values of certain asset classes, like Supramaxes and Ultramaxes. Unfortunately, a lot of people jumped the gun, and the prices are now 40% higher than where they used to be. I'm not saying it's not still a very good opportunity, but I think that people should be focusing on the right asset classes. Well, nothing's right these days, but in the asset class with the best fundamentals, that appear to have the best fundamentals, at least in the market, and, you know, that have not moved. We recently agreed to acquire 2 Capesize vessels. We are one of the, I think it goes well, one of the few companies out there that we have investment appetite. And buying a ship at exactly maybe 2 or 3% higher than the 30-year low in a market where we believe that the fundamentals are the strongest, you can't go wrong, whether you wait 3 months or 6 months, unless rates go below OPEX again, which I think it's highly unlikely. certainly I think that you know, it's going to be a very good investment.
Back to your question, I think the underlying utilization is still very low. So although we see a good drag on demand at the moment, this obviously will be volatile and market will go up and down. I agree with Gary, you have to sort of do the best you can with your fleet, make sure that you have a good capital structure. But this will, we need to have some patience. This will repair itself in a way. Either demand is actually fundamentally better, China will import more, or rates will come down and scrapping will continue. You saw scrapping stopping totally sort of in April, May, and it hasn't really picked up again. Now with the Capesize rates, 13, 14,000 per day, you will not see a lot of scrapping in the short term. Obviously, you have regulations and things that we'll probably cover later that can assist us.
I think we're our own worst enemy in this business, because the second the market pick up a little bit, the scrapping stops. At the beginning of the year, the run rate for scrapping was about 60 million deadweight tons, and now it's at 30, so it's half. And that's because the market picked up a little bit over the summer.
And how low do you think rates need to go again before we see this pace pick up back up?
You know, scrapping decision, I mean, it is interesting how tied it is to day rates, right? But a scrapping decision is about a known quantity, the price you're going to get for your asset versus an unknown, the future. And when sentiment changes, that tips the balance. Having said that, scrap prices are up around 300 again. And now with ballast water treatment coming in, you know, that tips the balance, not yet, but will, right? So to take a ship through fourth or fifth special survey and have to, you know, put in the capital for ballast water, you know, just makes the decision that much more, you know, onerous for that unknown quantity. So to Brigitte's point, I think the regulation will be helpful, you know, when it comes in, which is, fourth quarter of next year. But there's no getting around the fact that, you know, each individual owner is going to make their decision about scrapping and what they think the future market is. And there's no changing that, as far as I can see.
Very good. I mean, as you mentioned, the Ballast Water Management Convention, which is, we think, could have quite a large impact. And when you see these vessels of 15 years and older, younger and younger vessels are being scrapped today. How young a vessel do you think we're realistically going to see scrapped when this ballast water convention comes into play from September next year? Anyone?
Well, I think it really depends on the underlying market conditions. We've heard before that scrapping candidates today are all vessels above 15 years of age, and this is before the Ballast Water Treatment Convention. So I suppose that when we start having the ballast water treatment, and if the market continues to be, you know, in these levels, by the time that an owner will have to install the ballast water on a vessel, we might see even younger vessels than 15 years of age going for scrapping.
I think the one thing that I'd add to that probably is that we've never seen a situation where there have been so many dry bulk vessels, either explicitly or implicitly owned by large financial institutions and banks. And whether that's because they actually physically have taken repossession of them, have them in warehousing, or because the equity sliver sitting on top of the loan is so thin or even negative. And as a result, the scrappage decision is not necessarily a conventional one. While interest rates sit where they are, the financial carry cost of these assets is pretty much zero for the bank. So what you need to see in order for scrappage to pick up is either something which tips operating income below operating expenses, or some kind of second order one-off expense like ballast water treatment systems, which obliges a reluctant, unwilling owner to put more money into an already underperforming or loss-making loan. So in some ways, I find it very difficult to judge the scrapping trend because many of the actors in that decision are not people that we've conventionally seen in the magnitudes that they're now present at that end of the market.
I think it's a little bit dangerous to put our or pin our hopes to the ballast water regulations to solve this market situation. I think it's history tells us that that's not necessarily happening.
Sure.
So, I mean, we're reverting back to the same. I mean, the demand is still growing. It's growing at a slower pace than it has. So the supply side has to adjust to this. So, I mean, either rates pick up, and you guys have to create a liquidity runway so that you're there to actually reap the benefits of when rates pick up because of demand or supply or a combination of both. So, I mean, in the interim, as you say, saving costs, is there any potential for actually lowering OPEX and G&A even further than what you have so far? Or do you think the most of the downside is taken out so far already?
Yeah, so I mean, saving on OPEX, there's a limit, and of course, to cut it to a point where you're reducing, quality and safety is, in my opinion, completely unacceptable and something we simply won't do. But on the top line, at Eagle, we're transforming our business model to an active owner operator, which creates, incremental value on the assets by trading them, by using arbitrage and asymmetric, optionality through charters and things like that. So there's definitely things that are in your control outside the market that you can do to improve your bottom line, and that's something that, we at Eagle focus on every day.
I mean, dry bulk shipping is relatively streamlined, so there is something to cut on OPEX, but it's relatively limited, and it's very important to run safely and with a good crew, and that's not something that you build up over a day. On the G&I side, we have always been low, so it's not much more to cut. We have increased our fleet and kept the G&A around the same level.
No, in our case, we are probably close to to the bottom. We have reached 3,800 per day per vessel as operating expenses, without compromising on maintenance and safety of the vessels. This is purely efficiencies from economies of scale from managing a larger fleet. We have gone to all our suppliers, renegotiating all each cost item on our balance sheet. And on top of that, we have extended the contracts with our fleet, reducing basically the transportation cost of our crew, reducing the transportation cost of on the crew side. We have also set up a so-called vessel performance monitoring department, which monitors on a real-time basis with sensors each specific cost containing a line of the vessel, and we can give instructions from the office to the captain and the chief engineer at the vessel in order to optimize the performance of the vessel in real time. All this has helped us to reduce and contain cost to the levels that we have said. I don't think that we have much space to reduce further.
I think on our side, there is a little bit probably we can do. It's more on the non-cash basis, in that As most of our investors are aware, and I'm sure a lot of people in this room are aware, there's certain differences between US GAAP and IFRS which have elevated our costs owing to new vessel deliveries. And so I would expect our costs to trend down slightly through our P&L, but less on a cash basis. I'd really echo a lot of what's been said here, is that we run our vessels extremely safely, and that is of the paramount importance to us. And we're about as lean as we can be relative to what we regard as a pretty high bar on vessel safety.
Yeah, and an important point is that, like Gary said before, there's only a certain limit down to which you can cut costs. You always have to remember that a lot of these things you don't cut, you defer. So if, for example, repairs and maintenance and spares and all other expensive items for the operating expenses you don't do, you're going to end up doing in a later stage at a much higher cost. So it's not only about cutting, but it's also a matter of deferral.
Luckily, we don't own any ships right now, so that's very good. But what we see is that using, running a fleet of 130, 40 ships all the time, we see that the incidents are increasing because people are cutting costs. It's a short-term gain can be a long-term pain if people reduce the maintenance too much.
So, I mean, the other side of the equation would be, what can you do on the earnings side? Jens, you could perhaps tell us a bit about how you operate the Western Bulk. You're able to generate a margin from the way you operate the vessels, and whether the rest of the panel are able to extract some of these same benefits from operating their fleet more actively, as Gary alluded to earlier.
Yeah, well, on the Cape sizes, which is a significant part of our fleet, we have a very good cooperation with Starbulk, Bocimar, and CMT on the Cape size chartering pool, whereby we combined 60 plus vessels that operate in the spot market and the good forces of all the companies to optimize earnings. We have some ice class vessels that we have specific contracts on, both during the third quarter and the winter. And other than that, we keep our spot exposure at the moment, as we're not that keen to fix long-term on the current rates and sort of optimize the earnings on the spot side. Mm. Our sensitivity is like $23 million on $1,000 per day. So it's small efforts there are quite have a huge impact.
And
if I may also add in the previous point, especially about the Capesizes, the fact that you have four or five major miners controlling more than 70% of the seaborne transportation of iron ore. We're talking about more than 750 million tons a year. So at the end of the day, relationship is what matters, and the fact that we need to operate high-quality ships. So relationship on one hand with the major customers, as well as maintaining a good quality ship without having the counterparty risk, is what counts very significantly these days. And people tend to forget about the counterparty risk, which in fact has created a two-tier market, and that's a subject that I would like to touch upon. You have low-level owners that have sacrificed quality, they have sacrificed crews in order to reduce expenses, and that has led, like Jens said before, to a number of incidents. All these people are automatically banned and blacklisted by the number of the big charters. So that has created, in fact, a two-tier market, and it's very important to know in which part of the equation you belong. I mean, for all the tier one companies and the high-class owners, it's very important, like I said before, relationship and quality of the ships.
I think it could be interesting at this point to do a poll among the panelists whether you think 2017 earnings and value-wise will be higher than what we've seen so far on the average this year, and also what you think for 18 over 17, if you'd like to comment on that. We're starting with on this side of the panel with David.
Oh, I was worried you were going to do that.
No pressure.
I think we hope, and I use that word advisedly, that we've seen the low sort of around Q1 of this year. We are not banking on that. And as I said, we're taking additional measures even this week. But I think what you can see on your point, Jonathan, is, you know, that in terms of our equity raises this year, we as a management group did follow our money. You know, our ownership went up to the peak that it's ever been, which is around 25% of the stock. You know, we're a pretty open register, so we are reliant on the market and the market's perception of us. What I would say is, you know, and I think, you know, you can see our president bought more stock actually just overnight. We've announced this morning on the New York Stock Exchange. So in some ways, it's a look at what we do, not what we say, not just what we say, part of the cycle. And I'm sure that runs true for most of the people on this panel. So I would say it's we certainly are positioned for more short-term turbulence. We're comfortable we can weather that out, but we are optimistic that we may have got through the toughest part of this down cycle, which I know mirrors your research exactly, John.
Very good. Follow this?
Yeah, I tend to agree. The audience or anyone thinks that the FFAs are a good indicator about 2017 and thereafter. However, right now the market is certainly pricing at a much higher level than 2016, which is good news. It means that we have moved past one of the worst crises in the last 30 years. Now, if you look at the equation of the FFAs for 2017, the reason why it's still quite low, higher than 16 but low compared to historical averages, is the fact that Q1 is expected to be extremely low again. That has been changing in the last few days, and if the market moves slightly better and expectations for Q1 of 17 are going to be higher, I think that we will see a much better market. And I'm referring mostly to the capes that are generally tend to pull the whole market upwards. So we are optimistic. We think that the market is going to average probably 40 to 50% higher than 2016, which is a significant increase. However, it's still very, very low compared to the averages of the last 30 years.
So, you know, we also are optimistic that 17, will be better rate environment, having come off the Q1, all-time lows in our sector, which is Supermax. But as I said earlier, trying to, determine exactly when, what rates are is difficult. It's about risk management. It's about, preparing, and being able to cope with challenging markets that are more prolonged than you expect. But, when you look forward to 17 to 18, the fact of the order book, coming off significantly, if we go back to this time a year ago, we're facing almost 1,000 ships, to be delivered this year on the books. A significant number won't through slippage and cancellation. Now we're looking at 400 for next year. So it's a different environment, and I think the right things are happening. So it's more important, in my mind, to look at the supply side and what's happening, and that's why we're optimistic, as opposed to, picking a month or what have you and what the rate environment will be.
Yeah, broadly, I agree. I think an interesting thing on the capes, if you look back at the first quarter this year, almost 100 capes were idle when the rates were at the rock bottom or putting into to layup. We also put some into warm layup. If you look back now, all those vessels are back trading in the market. At the same time, the net fleet growth has been almost zero for the period. So if there are any more sort of increase on the demand side, this will increase the utilization and the activity because there are not that much spare capacity. Obviously, at the yard, there are vessels that are ready, waiting to be delivered. But there are also vessels in the order book that still have status on order not commenced, which are going to be delivered within the next 9 months. They will not be delivered. So order book is going down. The spare capacity is limited, but then it's about how the demand is developing. I think we will see better rates in 17 and 16, but we are also patient.
I would echo the previous speakers being optimistic on the rates that we will see in 2017, although I would say on a masochistic way most of us on this panel would probably want the market not to be good in 2017 in order to continue the scrapping activity and no ordering of new buildings. Having said that, people expect that the first and the second quarter of next year are going to be bad, and due to seasonality and the vessels that are due to be delivered in in the first and second quarter of 2017, and usually when everybody expects that rates and asset values are going to be down, and the market expects, a trend. Usually, it becomes exactly the opposite. It remains to be seen. But overall, I think that 2017 is going to be slightly better than the previous year.
I tend to agree with everybody here. It's not unlikely that next year will be better than this year. The Supramax index this year, based on the FFA for the fourth quarter, is about 5,800 or slightly above. For 17, you can buy the Supramax index at just below $6,000. So it's not the market is not pricing in a major improvement. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty out there. I mean, it's China last week or this week agreed to increase the coal production by 1 million tons a day. It's not unlikely that we've seen the top of the iron ore or steel market in China now, and that is going to cool off a little bit. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and I think we just need to grind on and be prepared for the unexpected. That's the way these markets are.
Brilliant. So this consensus seems to be that we could see slightly higher rates than what we've seen this year. It shouldn't take that much, really. So then another question with respect to values, when looking at the historical correlation between rates and asset values, would you then be buyers of vessels today, or do you think that the opportunities will not run away from you? Perhaps, Gary, I read the TradeWinds article yesterday.
Well,
would
I can't,
you like to comment?
I couldn't comment to them, and I can't comment to you on that. But I will say that, you know, I said it earlier, I think trying to time and hold, if we raise capital, allocated for growth primarily, and you know our intention is to start to renew and grow our fleet, and to you know try and time that to a specific month. We just don't think is the right approach, as I said earlier, you know, for those reasons. So,
we still have some vessels at yards that we can buy, and we have managed to postpone quite a lot, but that's an exposure to the upside to us that we will consider ongoing. But it's definitely not the time to sell.
Very good. So we got 2.5 minutes for questions from the audience, if there are any. All right. There we go. Please, sir.
Actually, I never said that I agree with the FFAs. I'm sorry if I gave the wrong impression. I don't agree with FFAs, and the FFAs are generally a lagging indicator, not a leading indicator. So you have the physical market, and then you have the FFAs usually falling. So that's how it works. But I just use the FFA curve as, you know, what is perceived to be the better anticipation for the next years to come. However, I generally agree with the rest of the panel here that it's not a matter of the FFAs, it's a matter of demand and supply. We think that demand from China will continue to be very robust. Anything above 3% in respect of seaborne imports will be great for the next few years. And if the supply continues to decrease, like flat this year and maybe negative fleet growth next year, I think the fundamentals are very, very positive. I cannot really say when all this is going to turn to significant improvement, but I think that certainly within 2017 we'll see that.
Yeah, I would only say I would rather buy than sell.
I agree with Jens.
Very good. So I think we can conclude with that. You'd be buyers?
I just want to thank you for not asking me about the election.
We can do that later. All right, thanks very much.
Thank you.